This is Hip Hop Holistic, a podcast exploring the connection between hip hop culture and well-being. I'm your host, Aaron Tyree. In this podcast, we consider hip hop as it's used by historically marginalized and oppressed people from Montreal's hip hop community in order to promote well-being in all its dimensions: physical, social, psychological, and spiritual. And we'll learn from a broad range of guests, including artists, educators, and community and healthcare workers, among others, who use beats, rhymes, graffiti, and b-boying towards these ends. What are the challenges and triumphs they experience while doing this work? We'll look to uncover all that, and in the process, discover how we can continue to grow the culture in a positive direction. Today on Hip Hop Holistic, I'm joined by Lynn Worrell and Juliana Lirin, founder and director and program coordinator respectively at Project Word, a community organization providing in-class and extracurricular hip-hop-based literacy programs in both public schools and community centers in Montreal. Using youth culture and art as a means to connect with young people is fundamental to Project Word's mission, and this approach has endeared them to the communities they serve. Here's my conversation with Lynn Worrell and Juliana Lirin. Hey, Lynn. Hey, Juliana. Welcome to Hip Hop Holistic. How are you both today?
Good. Yeah, I'm doing great. Thank you for having us.
Great. Well, thanks for joining me today. I'm really looking forward to chatting with you both.
Great. So are we.
Cool. So let's jump right in. Lynn, can you talk a bit about Project Word's origin and its mission?
Yes. So Project Word, so Word, first and foremost, is an acronym for Writing Our Rhymes Down. Mm-hmm. It was birthed out of an established organization based in Toronto called Literacy Through Hip Hop. And they were trying to find and build another site in Montreal in 2006. And I was approached to be part of the team. By the time we did the legwork of where we can have our Literacy Through Hip Hop Montreal site, it was 2007, and our site was at Tyndale. And the thing is that it was a Literacy Through Hip Hop was a youth led organization. So meaning that youth are in charge, and there was a lot of research at the time on the specific needs on how to promote youth led organizations. And it's great to promote leadership, but it's also important to have a person with like experience to kind of guide and mentor and show the ropes about how to prepare for risk management and changes in the organization. So the leaders at the time, they didn't foresee all the initial legwork that had to happen, and we pushed back our launch date, and they did it. They said they would have money to cover the time that we will push back the date, but they actually didn't. So I started off, this is like my introduction to community work, even though like it runs deep in my family, but this was starting my own work. So that first year being Literacy Through Hip Hop Montreal, I think I ended up working for free, basically. After all the amount of money that I received and all the amount of time that I put in, it kind of worked out to being like 20 cents an hour, I calculated at one point. And then I think it was because the people who were leading it at the time didn't advocate about the changes. I think they were a little too intimidated, or I guess they were like, I think it's very normal for things to not necessarily going according to plan, and they didn't want to disappoint their funders. So they just like were comfortable for us working for free. And then as a result, that's when we became independent from the Toronto-based organization. There was other sites in the organization that also became independent, and they became Lost Lyrics, which is a site at Jane and Finch, and one in Scarborough, who I consider our sister organizations. And it's like the people who ran that are really big leaders in the Toronto community scene. And so we became a word, and I was trying to think of an acronym like writing, but with a W, like rap or something, but like, you know, like wrapping around. And then someone was like, what about word? And then another person who founded it with me, Neil Botello, he was like, word. And then it came out, writing our rhymes down. And then everything that came, then it was like, basically, a lot of people who I founded this organization with, they moved back to Toronto, and I was always like the sole person. So I'm definitely one of the original founders and the person who's still there. And so I learned a lot from at a young age about what it means to start an organization. And it kind of really embedded something I really cared about was to fight against exploitation in the community sector. There's this, that's a part that I bring into Word's mandates, because there's a lot of people who like to depend on community workers for the goodness of their heart. So based on the origins of Word, I really want to make sure that artists and community workers they have to be paid for the hours that they do. But anyways, that's just the very, very origin story. We're talking about 15 years that like there wasn't a lot of sustainable funding for a while. We have been consistently at James Ling, consistently since 2012. We were there in 2008 as our first site as Word, but due to lack of funding or consistent core funding, we had to take a break, especially in 2010 and 2009. We were at this other site, and I started paying out of my own pocket. At one point, I was even collecting cans to fundraise. I was like, let me collect cans. But someone, I got a mentor, and they were saying that you have to stop collecting cans, because it's just like really not the best use of your time. Mm-hmm. They need to start like writing grants and da 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 da. So like I feel like I wasn't sure what I was entitled to ask for, you know. And I think that's a big experience as a community worker or a young person starting a nonprofit organization. It like sometimes you're not, you know, it's really hard to like. I hate that part of community work where we have to like get funding. We have to mm-hmm. ask for funding. Because I just want to do the work, and I just want to have job security in the meantime, you know. In 2012 we got enough funding to be consistently funded ever since. So that's been good at James Ling. We expanded to a second school, JFK, but the pandemic it's been really hard for us to get back into the school. We're looking forward to getting back into school now for the first time since the pandemic.
What? Which school, James Ling or JFK?
JFK. Sorry, I meant to say JFK. We expanded to JFK, mm-hmm. and we're looking to go back to JFK. Thanks for correcting me.
No problem.
J High Schools. Named after people. James and John, anyways, whatever. So so that's a little bit about our origins. That's really the history of the community organization aspect. But in terms of our approach, when I first ran it in 2008, I really wanted to dismantle the hierarchy that exists in the classroom, mm-hmm. being like the teacher being an exclusive expert of knowledge and the students being a void of information. So I actually brought in outside volunteers from Concordia and McGill who wanted to be involved in the community, and they were co-facilitators in the classroom with the students. They were volunteers, and it was an opportunity to break up the ratio of participants and positive adult role models that they were getting in contact with. So that was our approach. And then when we got our first grant in 2011, but we actually were able to implement it in 2012, that's when we hired two members from Nomadic Massive to be our facilitators, Butta Beats and Lupienza. And they were artist educators. So, and they also have a profile with a lot of work in the community. So, yeah, basically we had this model of artist educators, and it was more of like, let's make music and trying to do intervention through the music that they're doing, like just like critical thinking skills and media literacy skills that would be addressed through the interactions that they were actually having with the students. And then that led us to a SHRC grant that we got with McGill, a 3-year SHRC grant, where we teamed up with the founder of, I don't know if she's a founder, but definitely the chair of Under Pressure, Graffiti. And then that's when we were really exploring the value of artist educators coming into classrooms. We did rap songs for science class and math class and an English class and French class. We had a French teacher on the mic rapping. So funny.
Wow.
And then all that when we, before we started the SHRC grants, it was through this like $200,000 SHRC grant that we got, where a professor at McGill, Bronwyn Lowe, was really advocating for there to be a music program at James Lane, because that was non-existent. And then they created a position, and now there is a music program. And because that music program was birthed out of the SHRC grant initiated by Word, there is a strong relationship between the studio and the music teacher. He literally divides the class into the recording studio and people who wanted to play more instruments. And the studio engineer at Word is integral to making, to supporting the needs of the students. But it's a combination of recreational and actual class math. So that's how the program looks in James Lane. Last year, we had a chance to hire a coordinator, because it's great to have a coordinator. That's Juliana. I don't know if there's anything, there's so much more I can get into, but I want to let Juliana speak about any kind of things that would continue the story of the origin of the board.
That's great. I'd love to hear it, Juliana.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I'll sort of like Lynn did, I'll start with my involvement. So I first heard of Word because I took a class at McGill that gave us the opportunity to do an internship with a community organization in Montreal, obviously. And I applied to be Word's intern, and that's how I came into this. Funnily enough, yeah, my first project was sort of organizing the Word archives and trying to get a handle on all like the old, you know, learning materials, old song lyrics, old, you know, newspaper clippings, everything that, you know, we've held on to throughout the years, talking about Word's history. That was my first project, but I really grew to love the program. You know, I really loved seeing the students and seeing how like inspired they became. They, you know, just really use their voices and learn to express themselves. You know, and this program really does teach literacy through like multiple types of literacy in multiple ways. And it's really great to see. I really loved it. So
No, I'm sorry. No, go ahead. You finish, and then I'll follow up with my question. I'm interested in the different types of literacy that you were speaking about.
Yeah, okay, cool. So I basically just kept in touch with Lynn. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated, I sort of pick her up for a job. And luckily enough, they were looking for a coordinator. But yeah, in terms of different types of literacy, I guess I was meaning like, you know, obviously when we think of literacy, we think reading and writing. Mm-hmm. That's the basic tenets of it, right? And Word as an organization definitely does teach that, you know, using a very interesting entry point, a really effective entry point, which is song creation, you know, songwriting. Like, how do you write, you know, how you interest a kid who has some kind of like, you know, negative association with reading and writing and perhaps schoolwork in general? Well, you know, you make it fun. You make it, oh, we're going to write a song. You can record yourself. You can make a beat and you can write your own lyrics. Say what you really have on your mind. Say what you're feeling, you know? And I feel like that's just such a positive and, you know, unique opportunity given to these young people who, you know, often don't get that chance. Mm-hmm. But we also try to tackle a lot of like life skills at the same time. So, you know, critical thinking and media literacy, like who, you know, what is this message that you're getting from, you know, all the media you're absorbing as a, you know, person in living in 2022 who has a phone attached to their hand and, you know, is constantly being, you know, yelled at through social media, through traditional media, you know, print and television, everything. You know, who is telling you this? Why? Like, what are they saying? All like very valuable skills that are very necessary for, you know, living life these days. And I mean, and always, but you know, these days more than ever.
Yes. So can you give me some examples of negative messaging that students are receiving from media that you all are able to address the way you use hip hop as a starting point for engagement?
We really enjoy engaging with the youth on their level, you know, so talking to them about the things that they're listening to, the songs they're actively listening to and the things that matter to them. So we'll often, you know, ask them to play a song and then sort of discuss the themes that we see coming out in the song. So for example, I forget what it's called, but there was this song that they, you know, a bunch of the kids were listening to, where the man singing calls his, I guess, female love interest a bitch. Mm. And that's, you know, that's interesting because we come across that very often in media of all kinds, right? That's a word that comes up all the time when we're talking about women, unfortunately. And, you know, my opening question was to them, was like, would you, you know, all of them, regardless of gender, would you feel respected if a partner referred to you as a bitch? Like, is that okay to you? And like that launched a really interesting and a really thoughtful conversation about, you know, like gender roles in media, what it means to be respected in a relationship. You know, all sorts of stuff like that. And also just started because they, you know, they've played me a music video.
Can I add? Yep. And then on the flip side, sometimes media literacy isn't coming from hip hop, but the environment that we create in the studio, students and participants feel safe enough to share with us about other sources of media that they are getting and talking about. So an example, there was an unfortunate situation of a student who was killed at the school. And then the ugly part, not at James Ling, at another school. And the unfortunate part was that there was a piece of that where there was cyberbullying after the murder, a glorification of the murder, was circulating on, I don't know what platform, whether it was TikTok or Snapchat or something, but it was, and the students were showing us this video of people getting, glorifying the murder And so that's an example of it not necessarily coming from hip hop, but because we're creating this environment where we can unpack things in a context of hip hop, then we are not their teachers. We are not the principal and we're not their parents. So it's like we position ourselves as other positive adult role models that can that they can depend on and trust and build with that. So that's just another example of how we unpack media literacy.
Okay, so it seems like there's a great deal of trust and rapport that you build with the students, and they don't necessarily see you as like just an authority figure.
Well, I think authority isn't always connected to punitive measures of that authority. I think authority could also just be a person who is age of majority that is responsible for the well-being of youth. Like that's the version of authority that we bring at our studio session. Like authority, we take responsibility to make a safer space. We cannot promise safe space ever, because we can't control everyone. But we do take responsibility to make a safer space for people to feel comfortable. Yes. And we take authority around that, you know, like in the sense that we care about that. It's not always like a punitive measure.
Yeah, like the type of authority that they would get from teachers or even their parents, in a lot of cases where they kind of feel like, I don't know, your authority, you're on a different level, but I don't know. There's a different sort of relationship, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, for one thing, we're not grading them, right? You know, yes. A teacher is, yes, responsible for the well-being and the education of their students, absolutely. But they, you know, they have other, you know, duties to fulfill, right? They need to get the kids to pass the test, you know, via a certain margin, for example. But we're not, our job isn't to sit there and judge their progress, you know. It's just to be there to sort of encourage their process, their progress as they, in whatever direction they want to go, for example, you know. And obviously, yes, we want them to learn. We want them to progress and get better at the skills that they value. But there's no value judgment there in terms of, you know, is this A-level work or D-level work? It's always, you know, very much based on an individual level, you know, so from student to student, we're going to gear our approaches like slightly differently and try to just meet them where they are.
Yeah. You speaking about like the issue with the bullying around, or even the lyrics in the songs. Mm-hmm. I love hip hop. There's a lot of aspects of it that I'm not too much in love with. So, yeah, how do you deal with those tensions within hip hop? And like, I don't get the feeling that you censor the students, that they are allowed to express themselves and then speak about how they express themselves and how that impacts their lives and the lives of others around them. Is that so?
Yeah, well, you know, we are definitely still working within a, like an academic context. Like we, you know, our program takes place on school grounds. So obviously there are some levels of, you know, there's some censorship, if we're going to call it that, in terms of like, yeah, they can't say slurs. They can't, you know, be derogatory towards each other or you know, make threats towards each other, like just, you know, common sense stuff to keep a respectful, you know, learning and working environment. But the other things, like all these you know, themes, at least the way I see it, is that, like, yes, these themes are present in hip hop culture, but they, you know, they don't come from nowhere. They're also present in our world much more broadly, you know? Mm-hmm. So regardless of whether they come up through hip hop or just through, you know, the kids speaking to someone, you know, just on the street or maybe in their family or wherever, you know, these things are happening. They need to be discussed. They need to be addressed, you know, and like children are, they're young, but they're not, you know, they're not completely unaware of this. You know, they have thoughts and they have questions, and it's important to address that and to speak to them, you know, with respect and to, you know, really take them seriously when they come to you with a question or an observation. So yeah, my personal policy just revolved around being, you know, frank and honest and respectful with them. And, you know, I'll give them my opinion if they want my opinion. I'll give them more information if they want more information. And just, you know, take it as it comes. Because it would be really unfair and fundamentally untrue to, for example, only talk about misogyny through the lines of hip-hop. Like, yes, that might be our entry point, but misogyny comes at you, you know, from all sides.
Absolutely.
Just for instance.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. And yeah, that you use hip hop as a tool for like broader engagement and recognizing that, yeah, the themes and problematic issues that are spoken about in hip hop are not do not belong just to hip hop, but belong to society at large.
Yeah, I really feel that hip hop is kind of a mirror of society. It just is just like, it's like really reflects of everything that they like what's happening. So it's not, I'm really big on like saying things that we talk about in the context of hip hop is not original to hip hop. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of like the tensions that we're talking about, the things that we love and we don't love, those things are not original to hip hop. They are just a reflection from, if I may, a white supremacist, capitalistic patriarchy, that hip hop has a way of just reporting on that.
Is that what you believe basically makes hip hop such an effective way to engage you, youth in particular?
Yeah, because it is, hip hop is also, it definitely is from the African diaspora, but it's mm-hmm. also a youth culture. It's mm-hmm. it's youth culture. So when we're talking about youth culture, that means youth in this culture will always be at the helm of what's hot and what's good. They will always be the experts. You always have to turn to them to know what's the latest and greatest. And it's really their, it's, if you really want to keep a pulse check on like what's going on with hip hop, you have to consult the youth, and kind of flips like the classic paradigm between like the expert teacher and the void of information with students, because the experts in hip hop culture will always be the youth. Mm-hmm.
I can see that, how the, like, how could you be as a teacher or someone looking from a different perspective, how can you be an expert on something that you're not involved directly with, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I think Def said it also really well. It's like when you're asking what's going on with hip hop, what's going on with hip hop, you got to ask what's going on with the world.
Mm-hmm. Like, we are hip hop. Hip hop is us.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you smoked out, hip hop is going to be smoked out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it's just, and so I really feel like he was like reiterating that idea of like, it's just being a reflection, you know? It's like, when I listen to like Kendrick Lamar, Mad City, Good Kid, Mad City, I just feel like he's like a reporter of what's going on in Compton, you know? Mm-hmm. Like it sounds like a like, you know, he's kind of just telling what's happening there, you know?
Mm-hmm. And not a glorification necessarily, just a reporting.
Yeah, that's how I see it. Yeah. That's how I experience the music.
Yes, definitely. So in terms of, I imagine, you know, you get feedback from parents or other adults. How do they respond to the program and the things that youth are doing and writing? And how do other adults respond to this?
I feel like Juliana had a chance to, you could speak on our relationship and how we engage the parents for our artist residency program that we just had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, because our program is mostly based in school, during the school year, we unfortunately don't have a huge amount of opportunities to connect with the parents. But last summer, we sort of resuscitated our artist residency program, which gave interested youth the chance to come in consistently, at least twice a week, to a community-run studio, No Bad Sound Studio. Quick little shout-out, because they're amazing. They're the best. And record EPs. Each record their own EP and their own original music consistently on a schedule over the course of 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, over the course of 8 weeks. And that also gave us a really, really great opportunity to connect a bit more with their parents. And overwhelmingly, what we heard from the parents were like, you know, thank you for giving, you know, my child this opportunity to express themselves, you know, thank you for, you know, taking the time and paying attention, stuff like that. I think that there really is a need. There's very clearly a need for youth to be encouraged to express themselves and to, you know, talk about their experiences, to share, you know, their worldview. Because ultimately, that's what we're trying to do here. You know, we're trying to, you know, prepare them, yes, for you know, the world once they turn 18, but also to, you know, show them the power of their words and the power of their experiences and how valuable it is for them to share that with everyone and how that can bring people together and create connections and really just make the world a brighter place.
Yes, that's wonderful. What have been some of the positive impacts you've seen from engaging in this way?
Honestly, I've seen kids really come together.
Yeah.
You know, of different ages, of different, well, marginally different backgrounds, you know, come together and really encourage each other in ways that you wouldn't necessarily expect.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen kids, only got hired a little bit over a year ago. And before that, I was just an intern. So I haven't been around for the longest time. But just over the year and some change that I've been around, I've seen, I mean, it's really, really cheesy to say that they've blossomed, but I've just seen them come back with, you know, more and more confidence each time, you know, to get in the booth and to just not be intimidated by, you know, all the equipment and all the ways, you know, they might be worried about embarrassing themselves, just, you know, throw themselves into their creativity and, you know, step into their power and, like, you know, say what they need to say into the mic. And that's just great. It's the best thing. It's the best feeling in the world to see, you know, a young person really start to take themselves seriously and to realize how much they have to give. and to find joy in, you know, in that giving.
Yes, it seems like you're fostering a growth mindset that, you know, I might mess up the recording, you know, but I have people around me that are going to show me, give me direction, show me the right way to go about it. And you know what? I'm going to learn from that experience and build from there. And I don't think it's cheesy to say that they're blossoming or unfolding through the process. But
And I really have to give a lot of credit to Jason Newcomen, our producer and studio tech, who sound engineer, because he really makes a point of making the studio like a no judgment place. You know, like if someone goes into the booth, no one's gonna say anything negative about the performance they just gave. You know, and that's just such an important part of the program. That's such an important part of like the environment we create, because without that, we really wouldn't be able to make the progress that we have.
It sounds supportive, like there's support all around, support from the facilitators, support from the peers within that space. What are some of the challenges you had to overcome then while doing this work?
Well, we'll start off with core funding. That's been one, and over the time. I also want to shout out our other staff member, Rayanna Speed, who is an excellent poet, singer, songwriter. And she kind of got into our team last year. She used to be part of our residency program. She got into our team last year, but we already kind of had the program running. So this year she's in our class. But other obstacles is, another structural obstacle, like our program is like literally ran out of the school. So unlike MDS, we have to kind of always negotiate everything we want to do with the principal. And
MDS being No Bad Sound.
Yeah. So MDS being its own community center has a lot more control over that. But because we are based out of the school studio that we kind of started, another obstacle is that there's a high turnover of principals at James Ling. I can't even tell you how many. I think we have 1, 2, 3, 4. I think right now we just got a new principal. It must be our 4th or 5th principal, or maybe even 6th in 12 years. No, since 2012. Yeah. So, there's always like a new principal and they want to kind of, you know, they want to put everything on hold to assess the situation, see how everything, so it could really kind of slow things down sometimes. But, you know, it's always a change of culture when you have a different principal. Like I don't know how much people really think about when there's turnover of administration at a school, it really kind of changes things. That's been a challenge. Other challenges have been, there's some things that you really want people to be their authentic self. And sometimes there's like young minds really just want to imitate what they're seeing. And a lot of people want to become YouTube famous. And they want to just do what they see in success as YouTube. And it really speaks volumes to how much our participants are like consuming videos all the time.
We'll be right back with more Hip Hop Holistic after a brief interlude. We'll be right back.
We're back with more Hip Hop Holistic. Lynn had to step away to handle some family business, so I'd like to thank her for coming on and sharing her perspective. It truly is appreciated. Fortunately, Juliana could stick around and speak a bit more about Project Word. Here's more of my conversation with Juliana Levine. What are the tensions that you usually encounter doing this work in the school environment in particular?
Well, yeah, there's definitely been discussions about, you know, appropriate language, appropriate themes and topics and stuff. We do our best to be respectful of the school's position. Obviously, we're very aware that we are in their space, you know, where, yes, we're providing a service to their students, but it is ultimately, you know, the school's campus, and they, you know, we have to respect their position. But honestly, from what I've understood from speaking with Lynn and speaking with Jason and some of the other previous animators and songwriters and producers, things have progressed quite a ways. You know, hip hop education has come a long way since Word began. And people seem more open to it nowadays, which is amazing. I would say, like, the biggest, if there was a source of tension, it would definitely be, you know, subject matter and the way it's presented. My personal opinion is just, like, you know, like I said earlier, these themes are not just present in hip hop, they are present in our society. And we owe it to our youth to take their questions and their opinions seriously and to guide them as best we can. I think it does a disservice to, you know, to ourselves, to our youth, and to the future of, you know, of our communities to ignore, you know, these problems and to just chalk it up to hip hop culture, because that's just not accurate. In terms of that other problems, other sources of tension, not much springs immediately to mind, to be honest. I feel like we've been pretty lucky overall.
Well, that's good. I don't want to go looking for trouble, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you're not encountering a whole lot, then...
there are smaller things, but, like, but as a source of overall tension, like, yeah, that's all that really comes to mind.
Yeah, so... doing this work, what, you know, like Lynn talked about being a community worker, and, you know, there's a segment of the population that likes to take advantage, you know, take kindness for weakness and not give people their proper due, whether it's pay or whether it's acknowledgement. Acknowledgement of the work you're doing and the impact you're having. That I imagine can be kind of discouraging sometimes. So what actually inspires you, and what lights you up about doing this work at Project Word?
Honestly, I think we have a really great team. I appreciate everyone I work with enormously. But it ultimately comes down to the youth. Like, they're so great. You know, I get to work and there's always just something new, like, miss, I heard this new song, miss, I had this new idea I want to talk about, you know, or I have a question and I want your opinion. Like, it's always something interesting. It's always something that, like, just sparks my creativity, my interest, and I want to pay attention. I look forward to going to work every day, because I get to, you know, contribute in some small way to, like, their education and to their growing up. And that's the best. That's the best thing I could possibly be doing with my life right now.
That's amazing. I'm sure that all that you feel, all that bubbling up inside of you kind of contributes to the environment that you all have created at Project Word. Because I would imagine that I presume that a lot of people that are doing this work with you there feel similar to how you feel.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Like, they're such a delight. The students they're amazing. Everyone definitely feels similarly to me.
Yeah. Okay. Is there, like, we're about at time. So is there anything that I didn't ask that you wish that I did? Anything that you want to express?
I think that we've touched, like, most of our bases. You know, mm-hmm. We've covered everything that really needs to be said. There's nothing, you know, this won't really come to a surprise. It's come to anyone as a surprise, I feel like, but I feel like I've spoken pretty passionately thus far, but I've got big dreams, you know, not just me, the entire team has big dreams for the future Word, you know, and we really look forward to being able to, you know, expand hopefully and to just help more kids express themselves and record their music and share their music with the world. And I really hope we get to do that for as long as it's, you know, necessary, or I mean, not just necessary, but like helpful to the youth and their community overall.
Yeah, I can't imagine a time when it won't be necessary.
Yeah.
You know, and if that time comes, then we've made it to the promised land, I guess. You know, there are always issues, always problems that need to be addressed. And seeing as you have articulated very well how hip hop goes a long way to starting these discussions, these really important discussions that need to be had.
I feel like hip hop is just such a fantastic, you know, teaching tool and learning tool, because it's, you know, yes, it's popular culture, but it's overall, you know, it's an art form. It's an art form that's accessible to these, you know, to these kids that interests them. And then therefore becomes such an amazing, you know, bridge towards like other forms of art, not just other forms of art, but, you know, there's this whole world of self-expression that they can just like walk into one day. And that's the, you know, it's the best. Really, we just want them to feel happy and comfortable and to really step into the power of their own self-expression. And that's what hip hop does, you know, that's what hip hop teaches them. And hopefully that's what we're also teaching them as well.
Well, that certainly appears to be the case. Yeah. Most definitely. Well, as we reach the end of our discussion, I'd love for you to describe what well-being looks like to you, what it means for you in the context of hip hop, but also just in the broader context of life itself, life in general.
Mm-hmm. I would say that overall, well-being means peace. It's and I don't mean that just in the context of like, you know, the opposite of war is peace. I mean like peace spiritually, peace, you know, within the community, peace and your ability to rest at the end of a day, you know, not always having to, you know, grind and scrabble for, you know, just to make a living, to feel at the end of the day that you're appreciated and supported within your community, that your thoughts and feelings are valid and that they're respected, and that, you know, the society you live in is taking you seriously, not ignoring your needs. And, you know,
yes,
you know,
oh, that's very well said. I mean, if that's all you have, is said beautifully. I really like that piece, you know, like inner peace with ourselves, but also from what I kind of understand, peace within the community as well.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's very beautifully said. And I would agree with you on that one. So, yeah, I guess that's a good place to end it. And again, very much appreciate you sitting down and chatting with me. And is there where can people learn more about Project Word? Where can they find you online, or Lynn online?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a Facebook page, Project Word on Facebook, and that is P-R-O-J-E-T. It's the French spelling of projet. It is not project.
Okay.
I want to be clear about that, because we get a few confused people every now and then. Additionally, our website is currently under construction, but it'll be back. It'll be back eventually. Projetword.ca.
Okay.
And that's pretty much it in terms of social media presence. And if I could just say, I thank you so much for having us. I feel like I got a lot out of this experience, and I really hope you keep your project going even past your thesis requirements. Yes. And also, just a little plug, but last year we did have a few of the kids on make appearances on the Depth podcast.
Okay.
That Lynn hosts. So if you're ever looking for any guests, I might know some interested parties.
Okay, that's excellent. So it's okay. Plug away. So let me hear something about Lynn's podcast. I guess we can look that up on Apple or Spotify or.
Yes, I believe it can be found wherever podcasts are listened to.
Okay.
It's a really interesting project. It's basically just, you know, talking to people about their lives. At least I really enjoy it, and definitely check out the Word Students episodes if you're interested.
I very much am, and I definitely will. And I hope everybody else listening will check that out as well.
Amazing.
Yes. Thank you again, Juliana. And I'll include all that information will be included in our show notes. And yes, thank you again. Very much appreciate your time and you opening up, you know, about everything that you shared about Word. It's very exciting, very encouraging.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. And I seriously love this experience. Thank you so much for having me.